Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we begin our show by taking a look at how you and I can keep our lakes and streams healthy. We're talking with James Bracken. James, a conservationist, author, educator, served on many Lake Association boards, former president of the Wisconsin Lakes Association, and he has a new book out. It's called Saving Our Lakes and Streams, 101 Practical Things You Can Do Today. And I'm looking forward to talking with him. I bet you're looking forward to it as well. And I bet you might have a question. You might have an experience to share about a lake or a stream. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. James Bracken, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on, Larry.
I really appreciate you taking the time. Our lakes and streams, I think most people, if you ask anybody here who lives in Wisconsin, you're not going to find a person who doesn't say they love our lakes and streams. Are we?
I think so. It's pretty hard to find someone who will deliberately do something to damage one of our lakes. And most people who come to Wisconsin, whether they come here to retire or whether they come here on vacation, they seem to seek out the waters, the trout streams, the other wonderful streams we have. Or one of our 15,082 lakes, I believe. The problem we face is that some people who come to our lakes love them so much that there are a few people who think maybe we're loving them to death.
And how is that?
Well, there are times when we come to the lake, and especially if people are interested in purchasing property on a lake, they want to do things that they feel are improving the lake that could possibly have a detrimental effect. For example, if you build a lake home and you decide that you want to have a really nice view of the lake and you cut down too many trees, you take out some of the shrubbery, maybe mow down to the lake, what can happen is the runoff from a rain event, like a rainstorm, can take nutrients and sediments into the lake. That excess nutrients, those excess nutrients could result in algae growth, and that algae growth could eventually change the ecology of the lake. No one wants to see a lake that's one day is beautiful, clear water turn into something that looks like thick pea soup that you wouldn't want your dog to swim in. So there are problems that are caused by people, but there are also people who can solve those problems, and that's what this book is about. I have worked with lake associations for well over 20 years, and during that time I've written many articles for newsletters, lake association newsletters, that kind of explain different things we can do to care for the lake. I was encouraged to put those together into a book, and this is a book that is designed not just for lake associations to give to members, but it is designed for local county officials, local and county officials that make decisions that affect our lakes and streams. And it's also designed for the average user who, you know, maybe it's a family that's going to camp near a lake, and maybe there are things they can do to help improve the lake. There are 101 tips. None of those tips are things you must do. It's all designed as, they're written as things you can do, suggestions of things that you can do to help the lake. Simple things like if you have a campfire, try to keep it away from the lake so that those ashes don't eventually run into the lake. Things like with fireworks, trying to direct your fireworks away from the water instead of toward the water. If you direct it toward the water, some of the pollutants in those fireworks could have damaging effect. You can still enjoy your fireworks, but actually the best advice is to use your fireworks at enjoy your fireworks at a public display where we have professionals that are trained in taking care of the fireworks. You know, they're professionals.
Sure.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. Absolutely. Well, there are a lot of things that, you know, when I first opened your book, I just kind of opened it up to a page, and the headline of that particular page was "One Lead Split Shot Can Kill a 12-Pound Loon." And that sort of smacked me right in the, you know, between the eyes. And I know about lead and the problems associated with lead. But, the mom or dad that's got their little kid out fishing for bluegills and you have a little lead sinker on your split shot, or anyone else for that matter.
Sure.
It seems so innocent, but it can be a real problem as one of the things you point in your book.
Yeah, it's just one of those little things that people can do. You know, that lead split shot, when it is torn off that line by a fish, you know, if a northern cuts your line and that lead split shot ends up in the bottom of the lake, some bird might pick that up. Swans, loons, other migratory waterfowl, and shore birds. They use those, you know, they're looking for gravel to use in their gizzard to grind up their food. And what happens with the lead split shot, it doesn't go through their system. It stays in the gizzard and eventually is absorbed into the tissues, and the bird dies of lead poisoning. It is a very, it's a very rough death.
Yeah.
They end up drowning because they can't hold their head up. Now, most of the loons that die in Wisconsin that are found and inspected by scientists, DNR scientists, most of them die from lead poisoning, from split shots and from small jigs. So all you have to do is when you go into the store to replace the lead sinkers or buy a few new jigs for crappie fishing or whatever you're going to be doing with them, all you have to do is seek out that small area of the store that is going to have the non-toxic sinkers and jigs. The lead ones, most of the displays are going to have lead sinkers and jigs, but you will find the non-toxic ones if you ask for them. And if they don't have them, I would suggest you ask that store owner, that sporting goods store owner, to stock them. And here's a tip. You know, people listen to Wisconsin Public Radio to learn new things that can maybe save them money. Eventually, lead sinkers and jigs will be banned in Wisconsin. Now, I say eventually because it might be 5 years or it might be 10, but we know that 20 years ago or so, lead shot for lead BBs for duck hunting was banned. So now hunters have to use steel shot. That was a federal decision. The whole country had to do it at one time. And many hunters were kind of stuck with a whole bunch of lead shotgun shells that they couldn't use. And so the tip I'll give you is that when you go this year, when you go in to buy your fishing equipment, make sure you get the non-toxic sinkers and jigs, because someday you'll have to use non-toxic. And maybe by the time the ban comes along, you'll be prepared. One other thing about this is that several states out east have already done this. It's in the book, but I believe that the states are New Hampshire and Vermont and possibly Massachusetts. And I know that some of the areas in Canada have bans on lead terminal tackle. That's sinkers and jigs and so forth. And across the pond, England bans lead sinkers and jigs. And I think there are a couple of other European countries that do. And Denmark bans the import of lead for any reason. It's because lead is such a toxic material. Some people say more toxic than mercury.
James Bracken, our guest today, he is the author of Saving Our Lakes and Streams, 101 Practical Things you can do today. And we're talking about them right now. Split Shot is one of the examples, and he's got many, many more, of course, as we visit with him. What about you? If you have a question or comment or an experience to share, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Ann in Green Bay has something for us, so let's go there. Ann, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I would just like to ask your guest how he feels about this new law that was passed that allows property owners to do any kind of dredging in the lake that they would like to do. I can't imagine that's good for the ecosystem, so I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ann. Actually, that was one of a number of laws that were circulated through the legislature last fall. Some of them were passed and some were not, and I believe that was one that was not. And that's good because dredging in front of a waterfront property can stir up materials. It can actually change if there's enough of it done, it can change the condition of the lake, let's say. The rule was, or the proposal was, that anyone who owns waterfront property could dredge out up to 3 dump truck loads, that's 30 yards, I believe, and they could do that every year without a DNR permit and without DNR oversight. And if you can imagine, some of our lakes are really surrounded by wetlands, and, you know, between a person's home and between that home and the lake, you might have a wetland, and that wetland would be gone. So that one didn't make it, but there were some other rules that were very disturbing that did make it. One of them was the northern counties. Now, in the past, the northern counties have had the right, guaranteed to them by the legislature years ago, they've had the right to create their own shoreland zoning rules based on the sensitivity and the condition of their lake. And what happened is that was changed. So now the counties in the north no longer have that ability. They must abide by the same rules as the rest of the state, which means the big lakes down in southern Wisconsin have the same rules as tiny, fragile lakes up in northern Wisconsin. And I think that is a big problem. Now, there are many volunteers, many concerned lake association members and volunteers who got together and worked hard to change that back. They did not get a change back. The counties still do not have the ability to do their own shoreland zoning. But they did make some changes that prevented things like a cabin every 100 feet, which could have been the result of that particular bill.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was quite disturbing. Now, on that subject, without really talking much about our legislature, it's kind of important for people to understand that we have something called the Wisconsin Public Trust Doctrine. And that was established way back when Wisconsin became a state. In fact, it goes all the way back to Roman law. The public trust doctrine simply says that all of our lakes belong to all of our people, that no one can claim the lake, and that, you know, the lakes are the waterways shall. The actual language, I believe, in the charter says the lakes. The waters of Wisconsin shall be forever free. And that's the Wisconsin Public Trust Doctrine. Now, if the legislators choose to not honor that, if they decide to kind of work outside of this part of our state constitution, then the people who come to our lakes, whether they come to visit or they come to live there, the people need to honor the Public Trust Doctrine themselves, until some new legislature decides they will honor the Public Trust Doctrine.
James Bracken, our guest today, as we talk with him about how we can help our lakes and streams. And again, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 with your questions or comments and experiences. Love to hear from you. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at our lakes and streams today with James Bracken. James has authored the book Saving Our Lakes and Streams, 101 Practical Things You Can Do Today. And there's a foreword by Dan Small, host of Outdoor Wisconsin. There's 101, actually, ways that you and I can work to save our lakes and streams. And frankly, there's a lot more beyond the 101 ways, the practical ways. The experiences that Jim has had as his role and the many roles that he served with the Lake Association boards and the Lake Wisconsin Lakes Association, all of that well worth reading. We have many callers online. Josh in Sparta up next with a question. Hi, Josh. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Your guest was just mentioning. I really appreciate the analogy of the lead shot, and a lot of people might really think that, you know, getting rid of lead jigs and such might be kind of a farce. But I've actually stumbled upon a large fishing lure collection, and there's a lot of mercury jigs. And I'm just curious, you know, this is something that probably was popular back in the 40s or something, I assume, and how long they were around and what kind of effect that might have taken on lakes and streams.
Oh.
Well, that's really interesting. You know, you always learn things on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yes, you do.
Don't you, Larry? I never heard of any mercury in any jigs. But I do know that mercury is a prohibited material, and boy, I'd be really surprised if there's any mercury in any jigs being sold today.
Well, that is really interesting. I did not know that. Somebody else may have some history for us on that, Josh. Thanks for sharing that.
Yep, thanks much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah, you always learn something new on this show, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you do.
Nancy in Washera County, your turn. Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling.
How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, we have a home on a lake in Washera County, and we just went through the UW's plan process, and I am very concerned about high-capacity wells. My home and, you know, the lake, within a one-mile radius, there are nearly 100 of these high-capacity wells, and our lake is being affected by that. And I'm wondering, you know, I think all of your suggestions are marvelous, but doesn't it become a moot point if there's no water?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nancy,
yeah,
thank you.
That's a very good point, Nancy. And all of the state, well, especially the northern half of the state, about 5 years ago suffered a drought, and there were many lakes that just about dried up, and a lot of people sold their properties because they no longer had waterfront property. As far as now the northern lakes have come back. We have plenty of water on up north. Come up and visit us. But in the meantime, the central Wisconsin has had this problem with high-capacity wells. A lot of the water is being used to irrigate the fields, agricultural fields in central Wisconsin and southern Wisconsin, and it has drawn down the water table to the point where some lakes are really suffering. The legislature is aware of this. The DNR is aware of this. University of Wisconsin scientists are working on it. I don't know what the solution is. We can all guess what the solution is, that it's going to have to stop or the lakes will be gone. But that also means that some of the agriculture has to stop, and I don't know where the balance is. My own perspective is that I believe that I think it was Governor Nelson who said that it is imperative that we protect our environment, for without the environment, without a sound environment, we will have nothing. And so in these days, you know, under this administration, we have a governor who feels that we need to do all we can to promote business. Other governors have done all they can to promote the environment, and someplace along the line, we need to find the balance that protects it all.
Now, thank you, Nancy, for calling. I want to give Stephen Duluth a chance to join us as well. Steve, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. See, I live up in on the lake here, north of Duluth, and in the wintertime, I like the Spear Northerns. And the lake, well, I go through different changes through the winter, and I just call it an algae bloom, but I don't know if I'm correct or not, but the water will turn real murky green at different times during the winter, and then they'll clear up and get clear again, and I'm wondering if that's cause of, you know, by pollution, or is it just a natural cycle?
And is this an inland lake?
Yes, it's an inland lake.
Yeah, okay. James, thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's not an uncommon thing to happen, but not on all lakes. There are some lakes that are going to have different chemical makeup. You know, they're going to have different amounts of different chemicals. And there are some instances where lakes will do that. You can have it can be clear one day and cloudy the next. I don't think it is detrimental, but I can tell you that both Minnesota and Wisconsin, the universities have excellent limnology departments, and you can contact. I would go in Wisconsin. I guess we would probably go through our UWEX agent, our extension agent, mm-hmm. and I don't know how if Minnesota has something comparable to that, but I do know that the university will have an answer for you. Go to your DNR or go to your university, and I'm sure that limnologists are aware of that and will be able to answer your question.
Yeah, the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Limnology has a website. You might just go to that. I think if you just Google that in, you'll probably land there. And that would be another place you could just shooting them an email, or maybe they even have it online on their site. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it in a while.
Yes,
but it's another worth looking at.
And I have, in the back of my book, I have 4 or 5 pages of resources. It's a list of different resources with websites. And you can actually go to if you go to my website, you'll see the same list, and I have all of the websites there with the links. So you can simply link from my website. It's a little bit easier. Otherwise, in some cases, you have to type in these long URLs, you know, addresses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is one way. My website is badgervalley.com. And when you get there, click on the book, Saving Our Lakes and Streams, and that'll take you to a page that has all of the resources and contact information for different organizations.
And what's the site again? I think I have it up on our Facebook page. Jill, is it up on the page?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It is badgervalley.com.
Badgervalley.com. We'll make sure that's up on our Facebook page, too.
Yeah, and I chose badgervalley.com not because we have badgers where I live in Cable, Wisconsin, and not because I live in a valley. I chose it because it sounded like it'd be easy to remember.
And it is. So badgervalley.com. There we go.
Yeah.
Steve, thanks again. Dale and Eau Claire, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Thanks to you both for talking about these important things. Regarding the drawdown on the water table, I think it's terribly important that we all consciously voice the idea that water belongs to all of us. It's all of us. We're dependent on this source of life. And if we, you know, if someone pushes the idea like, well, I have to have it because I do this or I do that, but it's not yours. It's all of us. And then a second topic regarding your comments on lead, and I really applaud you for bringing up this very important point. We were at the Eagle Center last Friday, and when they did the show, you know, with the live bird, et cetera, they commented how several of the birds that they have were very close to dying because of lead poisoning, and that it's quite common that eagles will come across someone has gutted a deer, and if the bone of the deer was hit by a bullet, that will shatter it, and that little teeny pieces of lead then might be ingested as the eagle is feasting on the entrails, and that will kill an eagle in 5 days. that tiny, tiny piece of lead.
Yeah.
So that was pretty shocking to me. Both of you.
Yeah, thank you, Dale, for calling. Appreciate it. James, comments from you.
Yes, lead, I did mention that loons and swans and some of our other shorebirds suffer and die. What usually happens is they are ingested by some other scavenger or predator. So we do have many instances of eagles, especially, and some other of the raptors being killed by lead. I mentioned that eventually this will be banned, lead will be banned. I feel that someday lead will not be allowed for sporting purposes. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's sort of a heads up to myself. And so when I purchase, if I'm going deer hunting, I purchase copper bullets. If I'm fishing, I make sure I'm using non-toxic fishing equipment, because I know someday that is going to happen. Someone was telling me that if you go out west, I don't know if it's the Dakotas or Montana, but people go out there and they target shoot. And I hate to mention this. Some people think this is terrible, but they shoot at prairie dogs. And the rule is, the law out there is that you cannot use lead bullets, because that animal can be killed. A fox will come along that night, or a raccoon, and then that animal dies.
Yeah. So there's lots to consider lots to think about as you make your purchases and you recreate in the outdoors. There's no doubt about it. And there's, you know, we've talked about a few things here. Obviously, there's many, many more in James' book, Saving Our Lakes and Streams, 101 Practical Things You Can Do. Judy in Fifield has a question for you. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if using rain barrels was one of your 101 ideas, and if you could talk about the benefits of using a rain barrel.
Oh.
Actually, rain barrels are very effective, because they stop. If that rain barrel happens to be empty or near empty when there is a storm and you have a lot of runoff that comes off your roof, it will stop the sediments from being washed out quickly, because you can empty that rain barrel at your own pace. But if it's just allowed to run, you know, if water is just allowed to run really fast across your lawn, it's going to pick up the fertilizers that are there, other nutrients, the sediments, and eventually, even if you don't live on a lake, eventually that's going to find its way into the water table and, you know, possibly into a little stream, and it can harm a lake. Now, I didn't mention rain barrels in the book, but I did mention rain gardens, which is the same idea. Rain gardens are being installed many places to do just what I said, to slow down that rush of water headed toward a stream or a lake. And they are very easy to install. And I have a step-by-step, I think there's 5 or 6 simple steps as far as putting in a rain garden. They're very attractive. They
really are.
Part of your garden, yes. And it's a simple thing to do, and it can help your lake. So there's one of the 101 tips, install a rain garden. But again, I'm not insisting people, I'm not saying everyone should do this. I'm saying if it's right for you, you can do this. And in the same process, or in the process, you will protect your lake.
Yeah, absolutely. Judy, thanks for calling. Carl in Madeline Island up next. Hi, Carl.
How you doing, Larry?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Okay, I just wanted to call attention to a situation that existed mostly back in the 80s, and it had to do with military flyovers. And there used to be a situation where we had a strategic air command bases in northern Michigan, and the fighter, the Air Force Reserve fighter unit in Duluth, and they would have these exercises where they would, the bombers would take off and head west, and the fighters would take off and fly east, and the bombers would drop what they used to call chaff in the military, which is basically tinfoil in strips, and the fighters would shoot up those bales of chaff with their 30-millimeter defenses. And those things would put out about 1,000 rounds a minute, and that all of those rounds are still out there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I didn't know about that, but I do know that in northern Minnesota there was an area that was used in World War II for bombing runs for training, and they still have many potholes out in these some of these big marshes.
I know.
That are created, were created by bombs being dropped, and who knows what else is down there.
Well, these weren't really bombs. These were just, you know,
bullets.
The chaff would just flutter apart when it was when the bales were shot open by the fighters. But that used to be a an area that was a, kind of a square area that it pretty much crosses the lake between the Apostle Islands and Two Harbors. It was every day we'd listen to the Coast Guard channel, and if they were going to do that at that particular night, we would pay very close attention.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be out there on your boat.
No, they would just say there's going to be a live firing exercise between such and such a time and such and such a time, and we just kind of drop anchor and watch the sky.
And there it would be. Wow. Well, here we go again, James. We're both learning something.
Yes.
At least I am. I don't,
yes.
And you hadn't learned that either before, had you?
No, and, you know, I live up here. I live pretty close to, I live in Cable. We're about 50 miles from
50 miles.
The Apostles.
So there we go. Carol, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. I want to give Joan and Madison a chance to join in as well. Joan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, folks.
Hi, Joan.
We're on a one-way track now. I have one more question on lead shot.
Okay.
I worked at a resort in the Lake Geneva area years back, and they had trap and skeet, and that was all lead shot, and it was a heavy concentration all going to an area of marshland, which was thought to be wonderful. It wasn't used for anything else, and that'll be our target area. They were told, that the to stop using lead shot, and the resort people, you know, didn't understand, but they wanted to cooperate, and so they changed using lead shot there. I'm wondering, you haven't mentioned if it's still legal, in other places in the state.
Well, lead is prohibited for waterfowl hunting, and that is the primary place where you're going to end up with lead in the water. Shotgunners, people that hunt or target shoot with shotguns can still use lead at ranges and in the field. Now, there are some restrictions on some DNR land, and there are some restrictions, some no lead restrictions on some federal property. But I'm afraid I can't cite exactly what that is. You can find out from the DNR very easily. But again, I think eventually there will be a time when it when non-toxic shot will be the rule, whether it's split shot for your sinkers or shot for your shotguns.
And there are actually there's at least one company I know that goes around to various places where there is trap and skeet shooting, and actually harvests the lead that, you know, falls to the ground as the shooters are shooting.
Yes, they. In fact, they just. I think it was last summer that they, maybe summer before last, that they did that at the Cable, Wisconsin gun range, and I talked to the gentleman, and I was amazed at the volume of shots they were able to strain out of the sand. On the trap range, on the skeet range.
It is absolutely amazing. Joan, thanks again. Mike and Hurley, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to mention, when we're thinking about using and enjoying the water resources, I wanted to let you know about the Wisconsin Clean Marina Program, which was started by the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program, the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute, and with strong support from the Wisconsin Marine Association. And not far from Cable is a very great participant in the Washburn Marina and the Basil Marina.
Ah. Mm-hmm. And James, I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for bringing that up, Mike. Appreciate it. We have so many folks on from Facebook and from emails. Many of them have touched on things that we've already talked about. I do want to ask you, though, James, to just kind of go back through. We've got your book, how it's organized. I like the way you have organized it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a book. It is 75 articles, 75 short articles about preserving northern Wisconsin waters, and it is 75 photos from northern Wisconsin lakes, and 101 practical tips, things that you can do, not things you must do, but things that you can do if you choose to safeguard our waters. The proceeds from the sales in the next few weeks are going to be used to benefit local efforts to protect our lakes. And I will be showing this book. Actually, the book will launch. The first copies of this book will be available at the Wisconsin Lakes Convention in Stevens Point and at Northland College in Ashland. And all of this happens between March 30th and April 2nd. So next week, Wednesday, the book finally makes its debut. And you can see it at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Stevens Point. That's about, I'm going to say it's about a mile east of the Highway 10 and Highway 39 interchange in Stevens Point. The Lakes Convention is a marvelous event. There will be around 400 to 500 people who will, from all over Wisconsin and even the Midwest, and they will be there to learn about our lakes and to share information about our lakes. Every lake association and district in Wisconsin needs to have a representative there. So if you can, see if you can get somebody to the lake convention. And then the next time my book will be shown will be the following Saturday, April 2nd. That's a week from this coming Saturday. And that is at the Trout Unlimited Fishing Expo and Auction, which is from 1 to 7 p.m. at Northland College's Ponzio Center. It's a free event with all kinds of activities for kids and adults and games and auction. There's an auction and bucket raffles. And it's a really fun event that the Trout Unlimited group put on, and they do that to raise money to help our freshwater streams in northern Wisconsin.
Well, it's Northland College is kind of it's a great setting as well. James, it's so great to have you on to talk with us. And if I want to order a book, or if someone wants to order a book, we can order it, I expect, online through BadgerValley.com or probably from your local bookstore.
Yeah, Redberry Books in Cable, if you happen to be in Cable, or Marketplace in Hayward, Marketplace Foods. Amazon carries all of my books, but the best way to buy it is get it from BadgerValley.com, because you know that I will inspect the book, I will sign it, and I will ship it to you, usually free, although these books, we have priced these books so low that I can't ship them free. So there is a $2.55 shipping charge, I believe. But the book is $15, but for the next week or 10 days until the book launch is over, you'll be able to get it from the website for $10 instead of $15. And lake associations, all summer long, lake associations can purchase it at the $10 price. And that's just because we want to distribute this to as many lakes as possible.
I understand why. James, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. James Bracken is the author of more than this book, many other books as well. But the book we're talked about today is Saving Our Lakes and Streams, 101 Practical Things You Can Do Today. James Bracken, our guest. And wonderful to have him on. We'll try and get him on again and at some point and talk about more about our streams. He as obviously knows a lot about it with all the experiences he's had. Coming up, we're going to be talking with somebody who knows a whole lot about birds and has co-authored a book called Better Birding, Tips, Tools, and Concepts for the Field. George Armistead, our guest, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.